Here we go. It is hour number three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic day as our training camp coverage continues, and it's about to get even better because we're going to be flying to Oxnard this weekend, set to broadcast with you Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Our coverage is brought to you by the on-time experts, Rhino Shield, and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. Cowboys Twitter's coming up in 20 minutes, about 15 minutes actually. Here's Wolchek.
All right, let's do some sounds of the sports day. We did open this up because it is a headline. Everyone's been asking. Everyone's been wondering who the hell let it rip at the British Open. And, well, we found our answer.
Hold on, bro.
Oh.
Oh, shoot.
You're good. You're good. I can filibuster.
No. I was going to play that thing for you.
Oh, the fart?
Yeah. So at least there's some context to it.
Should I pivot and go to do something
else? No, I have it right here.
Oh.
Scheffler.
It was during the second round of last week's British Open. And
bacon omelet caught up with him there.
We thought, like, could this be somebody in the stands? I mean, that's what everybody ran with. Well, Scotty,
yeah.
Who's on
because it didn't happen right after the swing. It took a while for it to finally fall it's down. Like,
while you're watching the ball in midair.
I mean, you really got to push to get that much audible effect,
yes,
right?
That was a force, and I would know from experience.
And at the time, I thought that sounds like too tight of a sphincter for that to be Scotty. That's what I thought.
Well,
you know, I thought there'd be more bass to it if there was a dominant golfer that was very relaxed out there. Yeah, that sounds like constipation, actually, a little bit, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think our guy had some bubble guts because he admitted. Scotty, was this you?
Yeah. I have a very important question for you. At the Open, I'm trying to remember what hole it was. I think it was the 17th. Did you fart?
Oh. Yeah, that was me.
Was it?
Actually?
Oh, yeah, that was me.
He dealt it.
Yeah. That was him. He said, you're out there for like 6 hours. You're eating some different food over there. Some stuff's going to happen. And I think you called it there. You know, a little shepherd's pie. Maybe some bangers and mash.
Oh, the bangers and mash would do it to you.
Blood sausage.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know if I'd ever try that.
Quail egg?
Sounds crazy.
Man. Yeah. Good for Scotty. Needed to let that one out, and he did.
So do they like that food over there? Is that what happens? They're like, no, we don't want to import any American cuisine.
I'll tell you
cuisine.
What.
We'll just stick
Dawson,
with this. Yeah.
They have a thing called the proper English breakfast.
Yes.
Where about the only thing that you might enjoy on it is the fried bread. Everything else you would probably go, nah, not for me today. The blood sausage.
Mom, sorry, I'm going to stop.
There's something called haggis, right? That just sounds
bad. That's completely different. Yeah, that's out of the sheep's guts is what that.
But they just love baked beans.
Yeah, out of a can. And actually, like the Heinz,
Yeah.
The Heinz variety of baked beans. But they call bacon, they call it streaky bacon. But they usually use like kind of a the back of the bacon is what they normally, but they whenever you ask, he's like, well, what kind of bacon? You have to tell him like streaky bacon, which has the fat in it,
okay.
Like American bacon.
Maybe that's what it was.
There's nothing to eat over there but fish and chips.
Yeah,
4 days straight I eat fish and chips and some Jamaican food every once in a while. I couldn't eat the rest of that stuff.
I think they got some Indian food.
Yeah, the Indian food's supposed to be good.
Yeah. But
the Chinese takeout.
Luce is not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah. It's crazy. Now, it's a beautiful view.
Yeah.
It looks amazing out there. It's all colonial and everything. You're like, wow, this is cool. Food is awful. Get drunk.
That's then it. Food tastes better.
The pubs are. I'll tell you, pub food has actually gotten better, though. They've done some things with pub food to make it a little bit more.
I mean, you could
appetizing.
Get frozen chicken strips and frozen pizza. I mean, you could do it up properly. You know, I think they needed a proper American sports bar. You know, let's get a proper
sports bar.
Right?
Let's make it happen. Let's go to college football. Nick Saban, he actually jumped on Fox News, Fox and Friends, this morning. Asked him, hey, what's up with this coaching stuff, Nick? Are you coming back?
I'm really happy with what I'm doing right now. You know, it's exciting to still be involved in the game. It's exciting for me to work with athletic directors, conference commissioners, people in Congress to, you know, preserve the integrity of our game and continue to be able to create, you know, opportunities to help young people create value for their future that will help them be successful in their life, which is what we always try to do as a coach.
He did say that there was one time a couple days ago where he did consider. Miss Terry asked him to run the sweeper downstairs. And while he was running the sweeper, the thought did occur to him, man, when you were coaching, you didn't have to do crap like this. So he did consider it then. But as of now, Nick's not coming out of retirement.
I was going to say this earlier when we were talking about with the player contracts and stuff like that. I'll guarantee you that President Trump signed that order with the advice from the advice of Nick Saban. I bet you that's where. I don't think that President Trump. I mean, he's going to listen to people and stuff. Of course, he's the president, but I bet you Nick Saban was a big, big, big influence.
Yeah, I think Nick Saban bended his ear about it. It was a story about 3 weeks back Trump and Saban were having a conversation. Next thing you know, Trump came out and said, you're making too much money.
Connecting the dots. Yeah. And then as soon as this thing goes through and they have the regulations in place, here comes Saban. This is very much
Trump listening to Nick Saban on this. I think this was something he pushed through.
On both sides.
Jared Verse, we know about the offseason workout that he did with Aaron Donald, and it didn't go great for Jared Verse. Of course, Rams camp opens up. What's the first thing he's asked about? All right, tell us how this workout went with Aaron Donald.
We show up, he doesn't say hi and nothing like that. He sees me, he's like, come on. Gives me a little dap up, we walk inside. He's like, stretch how you have to. I stretch. We do four, everything he does is like a circuit. We do four workouts, it's all cardio. Versa climber, bike, lunges and core, four rounds each. You do all that, you're already tired. You're kind of like, oh my God, whatever. Then you do four sets of core, two different like workouts. So it's like eight different workouts, four sets each. You do all that for four sets. You go through, he's like, are you ready for the real workout? I'm like, Buzz, I've been here for 45 minutes. What are you talking about? We go to the weight room. It's all arms. That's why he's big as hell. We go to the weight room. It's like eight different circuits, all arms, four sets each. I'm there for an hour and a half. His wife came in laughing at me. I told her to call the police. I'm dead serious. Like, I'm not even joking. I'm dead serious. I told her to call the police. She wouldn't do it. I tried to lie and say my mom was at my house and I had to go let her in. He told me to give my keys to his, like his management or assistant or something. They'd go let my mom in. So I wasn't leaving. Finished the workout. I'm, like, dead tired. I'm exhausted. I had a plan to, like, you know, jump in the sauna afterwards. Didn't happen. Had plans to watch film. Didn't happen. Went home and I didn't work out for, like, another, like, day and a half because I couldn't move my body.
Jeez, some that are just built different. And Aaron Donald is a one of one. I mean, Jared Verse, who is a hell of a player and is developing into one of the best defensive players in the league, even he couldn't keep up with Aaron Donald. Call the police? You're trying to make up excuses to get the hell out of there? And Aaron Donald, no. You are stuck here with me.
Yeah, you know, one of the great things about the greats is their ability to do just more work, whether that's mental and emotional, discipline, or just their bodies, their hearts, like Secretariat, just capable of doing more. And oftentimes, I think that they feel like the rest of us just don't want it enough. It's like, actually, you're physically blessed. You have more muscle on your body per square inch than anybody in the history of the league. So, if I'm Jared Verse, I'm trying my hardest to get to that level. And if I'm super tired and can't move for 2 days, and I thought I was in shape, that is a clear sign that you are not in shape, you know. And then I would take you to the great runner Steve Prefontaine, because I was on the Oregon coast a couple of weeks ago, and you know, he tragically died, one of the great American distance runners of all time. But his best friend growing up ended up going to Oregon State University instead of University of Oregon, and he just thought his whole life that he was trying to keep up with his buddy. He didn't realize Steve was one of the best developing long distance runners. So he spends like his entire childhood just trying to keep up with Steve. He ends up going on and actually running in the Olympics himself.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Made himself better. It's
like, who do you surround yourself with, right? Like me and my best friend, we have different basketball and soccer and baseball games, but we're pretty much at the exact same level across every sport, you know, just because that was the level that you had to reach to. So if I'm Jared Verse, I'm recovering in 48 hours, and then I'm right back in
there. Get back there. You want to go be a Hall of Famer, go train with a Hall of Famer. All right, let's go to Kyrie Irving's Twitch live stream, and he's been twitching the heck out of it this offseason. But he went on to talk about the Brooklyn Nets and his experience there and how he didn't meet with the GM one time, the assistant GM one time, and when he looks back at the decision, he should have taken more time to delegate and figure out what was best for him. Here was Kyrie as we kind of get, you know, just a look into how he thinks about things.
You know, KD had just tore his Achilles in the finals.
me and him were, you know, planning on doing things to go to Brooklyn, right? I don't know any of you guys that would still stick it out with one of your friends that tears their Achilles and wait a year and a half for them to get healthy, but I'm that dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not about to leave K out there after a torn Achilles and be like, nah, f- that we not going to play together anymore. I waited for my brother to get healthy. You know what I'm saying? And now Brooklyn, I wish that we got a chance to get to know them beforehand because they wasn't f***ing with me like that. You know? And that's just me. That's my perspective. That's my perspective. Now, did they want me on the team? Sure. You can say that. But Kenny Atkinson wasn't f***ing with me like that, bro. Hey, Nets didn't want me like that. They wanted K. And that's my vantage point, right? This is the information that I gathered after I left. And again, this is not about Brooklyn. It's just about business. I wish I would have handled the business better and got a chance to know them first. Ask them questions. Hey, what's the future like? Instead of just committing blindly and thinking that, hey, we about to come in here and just do X, Y, and Z. Right? I didn't have much power going in there. I couldn't say who we could get and who we could not get. I couldn't hire the coach or if we, you know, you guys knew my opinion on the head coach at the time, right? It wasn't perfect, but it was very immature, right? I was very immature at that point.
I just love the growth.
Yeah.
Like, reflection. I think it's good for other young athletes to hear that. And I mean, this has just been a perfect, beautiful fit for Kyrie in Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see there why things didn't work in Brooklyn and why it seemed like he was like an untouchable. Like, oh my gosh, you're trading for Kyrie. I mean, I remember when the trade was made, I'll hold myself accountable. I was even doubting, like, oh my, the Mavericks are going to get Kyrie. I mean, yeah, hell of a player, but man, I mean, is he going to play for you? You don't know night in, night out. Like, where's his head at? Where's his, and just the leader that he's been on and off the floor. I couldn't be happier to have Kyrie representing DFW Sports.
I mean, perfect timing. You got him at the exact perfect time in your career, and maybe this Mavs environment, you know, helped him out as well. But what you'd seen is him win the championship, like, and not getting along with LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't, no, I got to get out of here. I know we just won, but I don't like this because it's not my show. And then he goes to Boston. He's trying to lead Brown and Tatum. They end up not liking him while he was there. They've since repaired the relationships. But then he gets to Brooklyn, and, like, he's upset with the organization and James Harden. He aren't seeing eye to eye. So, I mean, when he got traded here, the only reason I had for optimism was, you know, he's moving on to the other side of 30. But what Brian Broaddus told us about the relationship he had with Jason Kidd.
Right.
And I think, Brian, a couple of years ago, you'd said if there's any coach in basketball that can get the best out of Kyrie Irving, it is Kidd. So I was optimistic on that day and thinking, well, there wasn't a better move to make, but it's turned out to be one of the great trades in DFW sports history.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Well, Chuck, sounds of the sports day in the books here on The Fan. Cowboys Twitter top tweets going viral, including the update we needed on the right tackle. That's coming up next here. The G-Bag Nation on your home of the Rangers. Pregame coming up at 6:30 and Cowboys 105.3 The Fan. Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. G-Bag Nation. Time now for Cowboys Twitter top tweets going viral. From America's Team, about America's Team. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. You get a chance to hear Will McClay with KNC earlier. It was great. Guys are doing a heck of a job this week broadcasting from Oxnard. We'll be out there on Monday. Said on Blue, they did all the research. Said every young person has to grow. Said he's a talented guy who's going to work his butt off. So not too much concern for the Glenn Stretch Smith report that we talked about last Friday here in the Nation. Corey asked him if he could ask the media to take a course on any one thing to be better at, and his answer was human decency. Mm-hmm. And then he expanded on those thoughts and said empathy, just talking about how all these players are human, and they read this stuff. And I think more than ever, like, players are dealing with the sort of mental health issues around the constant, you know, social media attention that they get. It's hard. You know, I think from a young age, every human realizes that people are talking about you and it bums you out or it makes you mad or depressed or whatever. But I think that this is just that idea, like, times 100. So I don't blame the players that try to, no, not do any social media. I think that's probably the thing I would recommend the most. But yeah, you know, I think having more understanding for what the players is going through, I think the reporters are doing that fairly well. I think that's more of a commentary on the fans that now have unprecedented access to them.
What about the the front office side of things? This is where I would be if I was still into it, the front office. I would try and educate reporters then. I would try and if maybe it turns into a weekly meeting with reporters at your facility or whatever, where you sit down and you watch tape and you're trying to explain to them what's going on. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, I think there would be more empathy for players and what they go through if the media understood, you know, because we're always looking, well, why did that break down? Why did, you know, and, you know, like, hey, we made a mistake here. The coverage was, but we had a bust. And I think that if you explain to the media why something happened, I think that they would have more sympathy for the players and understand that, like, okay, that was a bust. That's stuff that happens in a game. But there's a lot of times we don't know why, and then we're left with, like, trying to explain something that, you know, might affect somebody. Like, well, it's like Jason Witten grabbing me that one time and saying, when have I ever run the wrong route, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I was looking at it, and he goes, well, you looked at it the wrong way.
Hmm.
You know, you thought Dez, you know, why didn't you think what Dez, you didn't think Dez ran, you know? And so if you had somebody that would, like, on a weekly basis, like, sat down and educated you on, okay, here are the five key plays from a game.
Yeah.
And maybe you could then better understand, like, okay, well, it really wasn't Mozzie Smith's fault on that play. You know?
No, I think that's a great point, because teams are oftentimes trying to play keep away with information, which creates a barrier of entry as far as your knowledge. And there's multiple ways you can get that content. Either you have inside information, like what you're explaining, or I have access and I can give you, like, the brutal honesty, you know, take.
Yeah.
And which one of these content things am I going to choose? And if you don't have the access to the information, I think there's not much of a choice to make if you want to get eyeballs on your content.
I just think that there's times where, you know, if you're a coach, you're like, we made a bad call here. This was a bad call. We thought we were going to get this look. We didn't get it. Ultimately, we paid the price for it. You know, we didn't help the quarterback here with the read because we thought we were going to get something else. You know, that's to me, that's where at the media, if you educate the media, I think there would be far, far more sympathy towards players, coaches, you know, and reporting.
And people could say, well, you know, the reporter should educate themselves. But there is a limit to what you can learn just by watching without having a conversation about what the play was.
I was a scout for 13 years. Mm-hmm. I was a scout. There are things that I used to it working in player personnel that I would have to go ask the coaches about. I go, I think I'm seeing this as a cover one. Well, no, it's not, because here's the invert. And then, you know, and then you're like, oh, okay. I mean, there are things, as you know, there's things in the media, and we're fortunate that we have, you know, a lot of these players and, you know, former general managers and stuff that are able to kind of educate, you know, us along the way. But man, there is not enough of that. There's not enough of educating. And once you can educate the media what you're looking at, maybe they write it in a way, and you're not influencing them. You're trying to say, hey, this is why they broke down.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's
think
the best media.
Yeah, I think the media would really take that. Like, if once a week we got to go and sit down with Will McClay for 2 hours, and we sat down and he explained to us, like, it broke through the game. Here are 10 key plays of the game, mm-hmm. and go through those. You would be far better of a reporter.
Yeah.
You would be able to say, okay. And then as soon as the fan base says, well, that's so and so. No, that's not true. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and now you have the media being able to kind of defend, and I'm not saying defend all the time, but be able to explain that, well, hey, no, you're blaming this guy, but it's not the case. Mm-hmm. They were in this and they should have been, you know, they feel like that this was a defense that could have been, could have helped them. But in fact, it didn't. It was the wrong idea.
elsewhere. Well said. And I would love that. I think that was one of the advantages of media before sports talk radio and cable TV, is they often traveled with the players and built relationships.
Right.
And when they got off those planes and off those trains, the game really changed. We go to Jane Slater here on Cowboys Twitter. Says, sources tell me it's a high ankle sprain for Terrence Steele.
Yeah.
I'm told it's not considered a major injury and will only have him sitting out a few days. That would be tremendous if we could get him back out there this weekend. That's the first significant dodge bullet of training camp, because yesterday at this time, all we knew that they'd sent him away to get a more detailed scan.
It's great news. Hopefully they can get him back soon. I mean, those offensive linemen, tough as hell. I mean, the high ankle sprain, though, you always that one hurts. I mean, you never know how long that one can linger.
Right.
Yeah, and they can be brutal. They can be 6-week injury, sure. But it doesn't sound like this one's that bad. Speaking of injured players, DeMarvian Overshown says yesterday's run up on the field after the money cooker
crazy.
Said it was at about 70% of what he's capable of.
Wow.
What are we thinking with him midseason, Brian?
I'll tell you what, man. They really don't have a timeline on that. Just talking to him, but the way he went running by us when that happened. And we couldn't figure out who it was. And then when he turned around, it's like, damn, that was Overshown. So, yeah, I mean, that was a burst. But, yeah, I don't think that – I think as they get further along, maybe by the end of camp, you'll have a much better timeline of where he's at.
It looked pretty close. But, you know, I know when you're coming back from an injury like that, you know, it can look good.
It was really good,
but
straight ahead. Yeah.
How much weight can you handle with cutting and trying to tackle and wrestle
That's
with the dude
the
while you're putting
thing.
Your foot in the ground? Our Absolutely. Injury report brought to you by Greystone Roofing. They've got you covered when the hits keep coming. Kenneth Murray and Deron Bland out, but that's baby-related, right?
Correct.
We got an expanding family situation going on.
Poor planning. There. Yes.
Yes. I know that feeling well. You know, we were shooting for an early January baby, and didn't quite happen until September, but you take it when you can.
That's a mind of its own sometimes.
Okay, what else do we have here, G-Bag Nation? Dak on the Micah drama has picked up a lot of viral praise. People are saying Dak nailed this. He says, I don't know if there's a correct way to handle it, talking about from the player's perspective. I will say that I think he deserves to get paid, and I think he should get paid. And ultimately, going off the history of what I've seen, he will get paid, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later. Got a fly over there? Dusting the crops over
what,
there at
man,
the golf course.
I am like, it's almost like I'm on an aircraft carrier in the 1940s.
Dak on Joe Milton says, Joe's a guy that's going to push me to be better each and every day. We encourage that in our room. That's the competition. That's part of it. I told Shoddy that from day one when he came in and we went to throw routes on air outside the building. I came back and told Shoddy, I don't know if I've ever seen someone throw the ball like that. It's impressive. He's not complacent with how well he throws the ball. He's going to push himself to get better. And the knowledge and the situations of the game, I think all that does is push this offense. I'm super thankful to have a guy like that. You know, I guess I hope that, Joe Milton can be a good backup to have for the rest of Dak's career. I think that's pretty much the ceiling outside of, like, a miracle shot that he just hasn't had experience. But, I mean, you're 24, 25 years old. You've been playing sports for a long time. How poised, how composed are you? And it screams backup quarterback when he's back there at best to me.
Yeah, I mean, he did get benched at Tennessee for Hendon Hooker. So, I mean, there's a reason he was a seventh-round pick, right? I mean, he's super talented. Arm strength is there. But decision-making and certainly kind of understanding what you're seeing and reading a defense, those are all things that he needs to improve on. But I think this is something that – and everybody's kind of probably dug in on their opinion on Dak, but this is the leadership traits that he has, and really he is very secure in himself. There are other quarterbacks, and I know for a fact Jalen Hurts is one, that are like, please don't draft Quinn Ewers, guys. I don't want any competition, because mentally they're too fragile to be able to handle that.
And
that
Joe,
doesn't
yeah.
give a damn.
Joe talked about how different it is here, and I think that is just massive. And hopefully Dak stays healthy enough that he can give you another 7-8 years of this, because Shoddy plus Dak I think should give you the best – like culture, you know, player-led leadership in the league, or at least nobody's going to be better than what they're throwing out there. And the environment that, that is now being created with veteran Dak and a coach that really understands how to, you know, generate that, how to cultivate that, I think it's special stuff we're seeing right now. We're going to come back with Jared Sandler, our Rangers insider, will tell us everything you need to know about Rangers, Braves, and your baseball team coming up next year on The Fan. Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Jared Sandler coming up in just a second as the trade deadline is approaching. The Mariners made a move today. The Yankees made a move today. Do the Rangers need to? Sandler joins us now here, brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter. And a good afternoon, Jared. How the heck are you?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Well, we're just talking about the other teams making moves here around baseball with the trade deadline approaching. Do you feel like the Rangers need to, or you know, is this team good enough to go accomplish its goals here in the last 2 months?
No, I think they need to. Maybe they can make the playoffs without, you know, making a move. You know, if you consider that their moves are adding John Gray and adding Jock Peterson back, but I think, you know, if all you're trying to do is make the playoffs, first of all, I mean, even if you do make a move, it's not a guarantee. But I think there are definite areas of need. Now, do they need to add a big-name marquee player? I don't know that they necessarily need to do that. You know, we always like that, just like in the offseason. We always love when, you know, our team signs the big name. And, you know, it's no different at the trade deadline, even though those don't always end up working out in retrospect. I think if the Rangers were to add a big name – you could look at, maybe a bat that could add some pop in the middle of the order. I know some people thought Josh Naylor could fit that. Eugenio Suarez, probably not as much. He's another name that's been talked about. Some people at one point mentioned Luis Robert, but I don't know that the cost meets the potential return. But I do think areas in which the Rangers can add, and doesn't necessarily need to be a big name, and it might not be, you know, a sexy move, but adding someone, you know, we talked about this earlier in the week, someone who can hit lefties. So maybe that's a platoon guy who only starts against lefties, and that's okay, because they got a pretty stout lineup against righties. And then just, you know, reinforcing the bullpen. The bullpen's been really good, but they can absolutely add some muscle. And, you know, the other thing with the bullpen, they've been remarkably healthy. And so the good thing is that, you know, they haven't had to have a total carousel of relievers throughout the year. I don't know if it's a bad thing, but the one potential drawback is that, you know, you get a bunch of guys rolling into, you know, September with 50-plus appearances. You know, maybe you got a lot of gas tanks that, you know, are nearing that empty light popping on before getting a little, a playoff rejuvenation. So I think adding some muscle to the bullpen and fortifying their lineup against lefties, bare minimum, are things that they're going to probably look to address. And then anything beyond that, you know, would be gravy.
Jared, one name that I keep see popping up, like if the Rangers, and maybe it even is, they're still buying while selling at the same time, but I don't know if this is like the national media, they just need to pick a Rangers player that they could trade, or if there's any legs to this, but it's Adolis Garcia. Like even today in The Athletic, hey, one player that's not going to be on the team come trade deadline day, Doley was the pick for The Athletic. I mean, is there, do you think that that's realistic with how well he's now started to play?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is just simply based on the fact that, you know, we talked about the money. If the Rangers need to create room, you know, he's a guy who he might have some value. There'd be about $4 million that you would save. And then you got to ask, you know, are the Rangers planning on bringing him back next year? If the Rangers are definitely, without question, pencil or putting Adolis Garcia's name in Sharpie in their future plans, well, that's a different story. But, you know, he's in his last year of arbitration this upcoming offseason, and he's probably going to make somewhere in the mid-teens. And so I think they've got to ask themselves, all right, do we want to pay Adolis Garcia $15 million, let's just say? You know, I don't know exactly what the figure is going to be. And maybe the answer is yes. I don't know. If the answer is no, then I think it opens up that possibility. But then you have to weigh the strategic question of, all right, well, is what we are going to get by trading him worth what we are going to lose by trading him for a team that is competing? And what you're going to lose is a guy who's been, you know, a Gold Glove caliber right fielder who can be dynamic on the bases, but obviously can be somewhat enigmatic at the plate. And so, I think it's an interesting decision. It's one that, you know, I'm sure that they are weighing, and you know, whether they want to be the aggressors and seeing what's out there for him, or you know, other teams reaching out to the Rangers to see if he's available. No doubt that there are going to be conversations, and with the third wild card, you have a bunch more teams who go into the trade deadline not from a binary standpoint of we're either buyers or sellers, but more along the lines of, hey, we're open to doing both. Like, we feel like we can improve our team as a whole by, you know, considering options on both sides. And with Adolis, that might be freeing up some money to help address some other needs that the team feels like they need to address.
Hey, Jared, I was going to ask you this question about the – it just seems like every other day I get a release from the Rangers about a player going up or going back. Is it getting closer to and don't take the trade deadline or anything involved, but are they getting closer to really establishing their team for the second half, and it's not going to be so much movement, but this is kind of who we're going to go to battle with?
Well, I mean, obviously health comes into play there. But yeah, short of that, I mean, I think they'd like to, you know, they'd like to be in a position where, you know, they've got their guys. You know, I think with the pitching, you still could see some movement, you know, whether it's because you know, this guy is just, he's reached that period of the season where he's got some dead arm and they need to give him 2 weeks. And so during that, you know, that stretch, they're going to, you know, bring someone up. Obviously, you'd like to avoid that, but, you know, you think about some of the starters who are really pushing things with an innings, you know, with their innings count, or maybe relievers. But, yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, you know, once you get past the trade deadline, you got to be prepared for that. I know you said you didn't want to make it in reference to the trade deadline, but the reality is that, you know, that is such a pivotal period of time, especially because, Broadus, as you guys know, we no longer have the waiver. You know, this used to always be the first trade deadline, right? This was the non-waiver trade deadline where you could trade players freely, doesn't, you know, waivers notwithstanding. You can still, you know, you still see player movement, guys who get put on waivers and whatnot after August, but that ability to execute a trade for players who clear waivers is no longer an option. And so this really does become a really pivotal period because, you know, if you have an injury to a guy, a key player on August 2nd, you know, that puts you in a tough spot. You know, teams, if there's going to be an injury, they need those injuries to happen this week so that they can address it. It's tough to fill big needs after July 31st.
What does Sam Haggerty coming back mean?
Well, hopefully, you know, gives them another answer for lefties. That was always, you know, coming into this year, that was always the vision, was that if he made the team or if he got up, he would be a utility option defensively who can hit lefties. He's a switch hitter, but, you know, his numbers against righties over the years have not been nearly as impressive. Coming into this year, he was a guy who had an 800-plus OPS against lefties, and he had performed really well against lefties. So, you know, he's a spark at the top of the order. You know, he can run on the bases, so adds that element. Like it was talked about, can play multiple positions, so that helps. And then, you know, again, they just have such a need against lefties, and he's a guy who has had success not only this year but has a track record of success against lefties.
What would be your outfield if you traded Doley?
Well, against righties, you'd have Evan Carter, White, Langford in there for sure. And then, you know, my guess is you would maybe acquire someone who would then get some at-bats there. You know, I think that is a likely option. You could also go with Josh Smith, you know, in an outfield spot. So now maybe you've got, you know, Josh in left or right, and you've got Evan in center, and then Wyatt the other corner. Against lefties, though, that's the question. You know, Sam Haggerty's in there, Wyatt's in there, but, you know, what are you going to do against lefties? And that's where I think they would definitely acquire someone who could probably play one of those outfield spots and hopefully perform against lefties.
And then what are you going to do against Houston, you know?
That's a great question. Maybe they can have, you know, some sort of a lease back, you know, where they get, you know, they reserve a few days. It's like a timeshare. Like, we're trading you Adolis, but we do have his rights. And you know what? There are some teams around the league who, you know, if you ask them that, I mean, this is not legal, I don't think, but If you ask them that, say, "Oh, this will help screw over Houston." We're in. Sign us up. We'll make that happen.
We'll do double duty. Get him a helicopter going back and forth. Yeah. Thank you, Sands. Have fun. Rangers Braves coming up at 6:30. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, fellas. Take care.
There he goes. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter. A must follow for Rangers fans everywhere. You know, it's quitting time. Crack him if you got him. What you drinking and what you thinking is next here on 105.3 The Fanless.